sums it all up. Arsenal, the cream of the crop.
Hello and welcome to the 145th edition of the Gooner Podcast. This is your host, Kevin Witcher, and we are recording on the Monday evening after the North London derby against Tottenham, the evening before Arsenal travel to Hull for a fifth round FA Cup replay. So let's start with panel introductions. Firstly, I think this is probably a first in the history of our podcast in that all of our panellists have rejected the offer of free alcohol and are drinking water, either still or sparkling. So we can look forward to a very sober assessment of the current state of affairs at the club. First guest is not a victim of our rotation policy this month. He is making an immediate return appearance, and due to a spell as host of this podcast, I'm led to believe he has actually appeared on more Gooner podcasts than anybody else. So a good evening to the holder of a somewhat dubious record. It's Mr. David Udo.
Well.
Good evening, all. Thank you for having me again.
Next up, another regular and a surviving member of the original podcast panel from when we started life back in 2007, recording in a basement flat on the other side of the old Highbury Stadium from where we are currently situated. He has recently bumped into yet another Arsenal player in the vicinity of Hampstead, which we will doubtless get news of at some point. But for now, it's welcome back to the man of a thousand names, Mr. Mustafa Goldstein.
Hello.
And finally, a new voice on the panel. His presence means we have two residents of London NW3 with us this evening, although I shall work hard to avoid exchanges on the subject of estate agents and coffee shops of zero interest to anyone but the Arsenal first team squad. He has been contributing to the Gooner and our website for almost 10 years, and I believe Thirst got in touch to offer the sale of a spare ticket for Real Madrid away back in 2006, wanting the ticket to go to a genuine supporter.
And I got it, didn't
I? As fate would have it, the recipient was one Mustafa Goldstein. Here to reflect on what a small world we live in, it's good to say a first podcast hello to Mr. Ian Henry.
Good evening, thank you for having me.
And thanks for the ticket, Ian.
No problem.
I'll never forget it.
Have you paid me yet?
I can't remember. It was a great night out.
Right, so I'll get a gag out of the way from an occasional panellist, Simon Rose, who tweeted to say, "Does the panel have sufficient mental strength to do the podcasts?" Ha ha, thank you very much for that, Simon. A question would have been even better. But anyway.
All I know is we have good spirit, good quality.
Right, let's start with the North London derby. A moral victory, Basti, or not?
Definitely a moral victory. Bragging rights, much needed bragging rights. My God, we went in there with a low. I did not hold out much hope at all. And even, well, certainly before we'd scored the goal, I very much thought it was going to be Tottenham's day. Then we scored, I thought, it felt like against the run of play to me, but quite happy to settle for that. On my birthday, it may be added. I mean, imagine that, a London derby on your birthday, the pressure. And it was I watched it in a room half full of Tottenham fans, half full of Arsenal fans. So you can imagine it was quite a lot of fun. They brought out a cake, birthday cake at half time, which was nice. So at half-time, everything was going swimmingly. It's my birthday, we're winning 1-0 at White Hart Lane, and then Coquelin goes sliding in. And, yes, at 2-1, like everyone else, I thought, well, it was curtains, really. I thought they were going to come and it was going to be 3-1 or 4-1, and we were staring into the abyss, and somehow, most un-Arsenal-like, in the last few games or anything to go by, we pulled out all the stops and managed to squeeze it felt like a win to me as I leapt into the air punching it when Sanchez put the ball in the net. Well done, Arsenal. 10 men. We only had 10 men away from home. Definitely not favourites on the day. It felt like a victory, and I think it is a really good, important thing for us now. If we hadn't have got at least a point out of that, I think we could have said, I mean, the season is all but over as far as the league's concerned, but there is now a glimmer of hope. What was that you said about hope earlier, David?
Disappointment, you know, it kills us all. We can all do a disappointment, happens to all of us, but it's hope that kills you. John Cleese in Clockwise.
Yes, so it's a bit with tongue in cheek that I say there's hope, but It was a well needed shot in the arm.
But do you think, Basti, that this team is actually capable of stringing together more than that in terms of performances that show a bit of battle and desire and commitment that Wenger talks about, because really there have been so many times when they haven't turned up. They didn't turn up against Manchester United, really. They didn't turn up against Swansea. So what was it that they actually made them decide actually to pull something out? But are they capable of doing it on a sustained basis? And that's the worry, because we just don't see it, you know, on a successive series of games.
Well, not that I'm a complete narcissist or anything, but it is because I bumped into Giroud the day after the Swansea game in the High Street. Kev brought it up. So here we go, here's the Giroud moment. I'm walking up Hampstead High Street and Giroud walks out of his Bentley or whatever it is. And I said, right, okay, I went straight up to him. I said, Olivier, I said, I was there last night. I said, what went wrong? He said, oh, we were a little bit unlucky, we hit the woodwork three times. I said, don't blame the woodwork. I said, we've got to get angry. I said, Olivier, you've got to tell the boys they've got to get angry. Get angry. We've got Tottenham on Saturday. Get angry. He said, yes, I know. Yes, I know. And that was it. So there you are. He told them to get angry.
Significant that we came back once he came onto the pitch then, obviously.
Well,
with your words ringing in his ears.
Well, I doubt I had anything to do with it whatsoever. But it's one to tell the grandchildren for a laugh, which I'll probably never have. But yes, no, to answer your question in all seriousness, I don't think we have the mental strength. I think they're sitting around in jacuzzis getting gob jobs all night or something, living the life of millionaires, because that's how they played against Swansea, that's how they played it. Yeah. They turn up, and as my girlfriend puts it, they turn up wearing high heels. You know, and if they go 1-0 up, they put even higher heels on and prance around. I mean, I cannot tell you, I have never been so verbally abusive to Arsenal players as I was against Swansea. I mean, the words perfume, ponce, to Ramsey and God knows what were coming out. And I don't like doing that. I don't like being angry at Arsenal. So I want to get behind the team. But my God, it was just woeful, the Swansea game.
It was lost, a rock, I think, bottom. Three seasons out of four at home to Swansea, and the fourth one we drew. So this is nothing new under Wenger. His teams have always been like this, certainly in the last 8 to 10 years.
David, is spirit something which the manager is responsible? Because those who will excuse Wenger will say, once the players cross the white line, it's not his responsibility. Do you buy that?
No, not at all. Otherwise, they play the game the way they want to do. It's like anyone's job. You know, they follow the instructions of their line manager. They may not. I mean, how many times have you been at work where you have a meeting, and at the end of it, you're saying, yes, boss, no problem, I'll get onto it straight away, and you walk away, and all you're thinking is, they haven't got a fucking clue. I've not done it with my current boss at all. Not at all, Gaffer. Not at all. Not Wayne Church. But, you know, ultimately, football's their job, and they're following the instructions of their line manager. All these things about, you never see any, you never hear any talking on the pitch amongst Arsenal players. I saw an interview with Charlie Adam on iPlayer last week, and he said, no, the Arsenal players don't talk to each other. So you're saying that when Mertesacker and Ozil were together in the German national team, there was no talking in the German national team. You know, there's no talking in the English national team with people like Wiltshire and Oxlade-Chamberlain and Giggs. I don't believe it. I think that they're following the instructions of Wenger. He's responsible for the spirit. I mean, David Seaman, I remember him telling a story saying, you go into the dressing room, there is no talking in the dressing room whatsoever. You have a little word with the physio if you've got a slight twinge or something. Maybe you have a little word with someone. Nobody says anything to the entire dressing room until the buzzer goes, saying, you know, 30 seconds to get on the pitch, and Wenger says, OK, spirit, quality, and sends them out. The way the players act, under the instructions of Wenger, completely his fault.
And they know they're not going to get hauled over the coals in the way that they would do at Chelsea or at Manchester United or probably Manchester City. And Wenger has no real accountability at the club for what he puts out, what he delivers really at the end of the season, other than he's got to get fourth place. And the players aren't really have no accountability either.
With that sort of approach, how do you explain the invincible season?
Different players to be stronger players. I mean,
they didn't make as many schoolboy errors. I mean, I've witnessed so many schoolboy errors. Like kicking Ramsey, how many times is he going to kick the ball to no one? Gibbs, you know, clearing it the other day. These are just one or two incidences. Clearing it straight to a Tottenham player. We've just got to hoof it. Mertesacker, you know, their second goal. Hoof it. Get it out. There's the two Tottenham players around. Get rid of it. Basic stuff, really. That, you know, common sense stuff. Sanchez and Ozil hanging onto the ball and trying to take four players on when there's a simple pass on. You know, what are they trying to prove? And losing possession, and guess what? The team runs up the pitch and scores.
I think it was a different team in other respects. If you look at the players in the Invincibles, a lot of them were players that Wenger didn't want. He, you know, not by his own admission, but he won't deny the fact that he didn't want to sign Sol Campbell because he was too expensive. It was a David Dean, leave it to me, Arsene signing. He didn't want to pay the money that we paid for Thierry Henry for Juventus because he was Juventus reserve left winger. And he said, I'm not going any further than this money. Thierry Henry said, leave it with me, I'll get him. Ashley Cole was in the process of being sold to Crystal Palace for £150,000 before it turns out that the photocopied passport that Silvino had wasn't valid under English law. And obviously Ashley Cole was outgoing. These were players that Wenger didn't want. And these were players of their own personality. These players were actual leaders. I mean, the Patrick Vieira he signed was an AC Milan reserve midfielder who nobody else in Europe had heard of. You know, but these players, you know, they brought the best out of each other. Whereas now, look at our captain, Arteta, by not being in the Arsenal squad since Christmas, despite being fit, I think that proves he's leaving in the summer, apparently to be a coach at Manchester City. So our actual captain now is Mertesacker. Bless him.
Is Arteta fit?
Yeah.
Arteta's hardly. I mean, the thing is,
he's
unfortunately,
mobile, isn't he?
When Arteta comes on or Flamini, I just go, oh, come on, they're all right players, but they're not world class, and they're not. None of them will get into the Spanish side.
That's an important point. If you think about our squad at the moment and compare it back to the Invincibles, most of the Invincibles had won major trophies either with their national teams or with their previous clubs. Or in the case of Sol Campbell, had been a leader at the club that he came from. If you look at our current team, okay, a lot of clubs would probably take Cech. A lot of clubs would like to have Bellerin, and most clubs would like to have either Ozil or Sanchez, and probably quite a few clubs would like to have Koscielny. But after that, is anybody really going to walk into a top team?
None of the British players are really.
Welbeck's okay, but he's not top class. Coquelin is okay, but he clearly has his limitations.
Mm. Never been called up for the French national squad.
No,
I think Welbeck could be the sort of player that if he gets a run and he gets when he came on against was it Swansea? I mean, you know, when Welbeck comes on, you feel okay, we're going up again. He wants it,
right.
You know, but Sanchez wants it a bit as well.
I think
you know,
to have a winning side at the top level, you've got to have 7, 8, or ideally 9 really top players. You can then have 2 or 3, or at the most 4, who are, if you like, 80% players. Mm. But we don't have 7 or 8 100% players. We've possibly got 5.
Well, there's no metal in the side.
So there's not enough of...
And there's no spine.
Absolutely.
You know, the successful Arsenal teams of the past always had a spine. You know, when you had Seaman in goal, you had Tony Adams or Martin Keown, you had Patrick Vieira, you know, even Gilberto, you know, and then up front you'd have Ian Wright, or you'd have Dennis Bergkamp, or you'd have, I mean, come on, one of the players there, I mean, just saying the words Dennis Bergkamp and Ian Wright, my God, what we'd give for players like that now, who just, no nonsense, Ian Wright, back of the net, fuck this, it's in the back of the net.
Yeah,
Dennis Bergkamp, he was so pitch aware, he knew what was going on around him, no way would he take on 3 players if he didn't need to. You know, he'd put the adult pass in that made the difference.
In fairness, it was a completely different game then. I mean, you played 4-4-2 actual football, whereas now you play 4-2-3-1 tiki-taka.
Well, that's
and that's something
that was
brought into the game by Guardiola and the Barcelona team that he inherited. Wenger's had to adapt his game for that, but he refuses to adapt his game despite changing the formation. He's still got the same coaching staff of Borja Primorac. Neil Banfield's been promoted. He's still gutted that Pat Rice has gone. The Wenger of 96 was brilliant, and that's still the Wenger we've got, but it's 2016.
But he's also trying to play 4-2-3-1 without players who can play 4-2-3-1.
Yes, exactly. I think he'd be better off playing 4-4-2 with two strikers. And one thing I wish he'd do, which I noticed Barcelona do, and they're quite a successful team, so they might be worth, you know, sort of learning a few tricks from, leave someone on the halfway line when they've got a corner. That takes out 2 players. In fact, leave Sanchez and Giroud or whatever on the halfway line, because, well, not Giroud, but maybe Sanchez and or whoever's not going to defend Walcott, certainly. Right. They're not going to defend anyway. You've got those two on the halfway line. We'd take away 3 or 4 defenders, then you've got less to defend against and you've got a break on. And we're so slow coming out of defence. Ian Wright used to do that. He stood on the halfway line. And I think Henri did it for a while as well, although then Wenger took him off it. But
But why doesn't Wenger do a lot of those simple things? I mean, that's the mystifying thing.
Because he did them brilliantly for 10 years. He's the best. If it's not broke, don't fix it. That's how he's thinking, I'm guessing. Sorry, please continue.
But it is broken, so it needs fixing. Exactly. I mean, we need to experiment a bit and try something new. Remember that game Man City last season where everyone said, well, the players just went on their own and did it? You know.
Well, we have tried to play like that in other games, from what I can see. But we don't do it all the time.
We played like that actually against Man City at home, and it worked.
Mm.
But he doesn't do it consistently enough, and I think some of it has to be down to the fact that there is actually a lack of respect of the opposition. There is this view that Wenger must have, and it must get transmitted to the players, because they actually admit it quite often, that they take the opposition too lightly. And it's quite clear that you can't do that anymore.
No, and at the same time, but they also look so timid with the ball. I mean, recently they've looked, you know, like, oh, I've got the ball, what do I do? They look scared to have the ball. I mean, Bellerin and Ramsey. I mean, Ramsey's been getting the ball. It's like, you know, everyone's gone, God, you know, please just don't
lose
it.
Well, that's a confidence issue, isn't it? I'm intrigued by the Arteta thing. Where did you hear he was going to be a coach at Manchester City next season?
Oh, that came out when Guardiola was announced as the Manchester City
coach. So because he's Spanish and Guardiola...
They were at Barcelona at the same time when Arteta was a kid at Barcelona B. And you had, like, a mentor... And Guardiola was Arteta's mentor.
That's been quite widely trialled, both in England and, I think, and in Spain.
So, just to clear this up for me, do you think Wenger has decided, right, you know, thanks to your loyalty, you're not going to get a sniff anymore?
He's got a habit of doing that. If someone's contract is winding out and they're not going to be signed or they're going to be released, they disappear. I remember when
Thierry Henry, in his final season, he barely played them.
Oh, he got a make-believe injury, didn't he? Flamini was like that in his last year. He was, you know, for the first 3 years, it was, oh, God, Flamini. Then his last season, I think we got so many injuries. We were playing 4-4-2. It was him and Fabregas in the middle. And the two of them clicked absolutely brilliantly. And it got to Christmas. He was coming out of contract. Having the surname Flamini, obviously he's of Milanese origin. AC Milan were flirting with him. And even though he was our best central midfielder partner, he was sent to the reserves. And he got a make-believe injury. Didn't play at all because he signed a pre-contract with AC Milan. And that was when Alex Song was promoted to the first team.
I remember Sylvain Wiltord hardly played
exactly.
In his final months.
Wenger's like this, isn't he? You know, if he doesn't like a player, he finds a way of being quite vindictive. I mean, remember the 98 FA Cup final, and Elka scores his two goals, a 3-0 up, he's coming off. It's like, well, it's Ian Wright's last game for Arsenal. Yes, Ian, can you take the tracksuit off of Christopher Ray, who's going to go on instead of you? Mm. Wenger's a very bitter bastard when he wants to be. Mm. Like Alex Song, how was he sold? You know, he was quite good for his last season, kept turning up late for training during pre-season. Apparently, he had a word with Steve Bould, who offered him outside, so Wenger sold him the next day. Do you remember his deal to Barcelona?
I don't think he's a bitter. I beg to differ. For whatever Wenger's faults are, I think he's genuinely tries to do what he feels is in the best interests of the club. I'm now questioning whether, you know, he should maintain his position as manager at Arsenal. I know you said Arsenal Football Club, but then I sound more like one of those 70s like Brian Clough or someone. But I still respect him, and I still think what he's done for the club and for football in Britain, as in the English game, is admirable. And yes, I think it's... He's lost some power recently,
a lot of what he did in the first best part of a decade, I suppose, up until just after the Invincibles were broken up, was extremely good. And it was, and then we went through the transition phase, and the piece by Charlie Ashmore on the website today divides it into three phases in terms of the club under Wenger, but.
Stadium change.
Absolutely. But we're now in a situation where we have got substantial cash resources. No, I'm not saying go and spend every single penny and, you know, try and compete.
Why not? I am.
Let's be reasonable about it. But he doesn't make use of the resources that are available. And he hasn't evolved his coaching, both his coaching methods and the people around him in all this time. He's still trying to do the same things that he was doing back in the late 90s and the early 2000s. When the game has moved on, we've got different formations, you've got different, much hungrier, tactically aware, astute managers, like, pains me to say it, like Pochettino, who's a very clever guy, and hopefully he'll be so clever that he won't be at Spurs for much longer, but that's another issue. Hmm. But Wenger hasn't changed, and he's stuck in his ways, and I don't believe he is going to change. And I've been saying this, people will know this, they've either listened to me or read my ramblings, I've been saying this for years, we're not going to have a sustained challenge or a team capable of challenging for the title on a sustained basis under Wenger, because he hasn't adapted to the new world, the new competitive world that we're living in. And unfortunately, Arsenal are in stasis at the moment. Not quite paralysis, but not far off it. And this season is a massive, massive wasted opportunity.
Yes.
Well, I'm going to go to the listeners' contributions now, because Basti was sort of singing Arsene's praises in the bigger picture there. So I'm going to read a question from Stephen Hawkridge through Twitter. Assuming Arsene leaves the manager's post at season end, okay, big assumption, but let's just go with it, should he move upstairs or sever all ties with the club? Basti, which do you think would be in the best interests of Arsenal?
Unfortunately, if Wenger goes upstairs, he'll still be manager of Arsenal Football Club. I can't see him going upstairs and just doing business or just being a sort of David Dean role or whatever role. I mean, what role would you give that man?
Well, he wouldn't be a very good David Dean, would he?
No, well, he wouldn't be a very good David Dean. But what role would you give him? What's he going to do? What is actually his role?
It'd be like Ferguson at Manchester United, president or something.
Yeah, just sit there and watch games.
Free season ticket next to your best friend, Gazidis, who you obviously love.
Yes. You've got to have a very, very strong person, mentally strong person, to take on the role of manager of Arsenal Football Club if Arsene Wenger is upstairs as director of football or whatever it is.
Very
because
strong,
he'd be the biggest elephant in the room imaginable. Even in a way, even bigger than Alex Ferguson, because everything at Arsenal is Arsene Wenger. Yeah. Whereas there is Manchester United, I think, has a bigger entity without Ferguson. So much of modern Arsenal is Arsene Wenger, and the board adore him. And I think until we have something of a collapse in the team's fortunes, they're not going to.
But we're going on the assumption, just say that he did go, which, as you say, is unlikely, but say he does go and calls it quits. I saw a tweet earlier, Kev, the question was, will he be allowed to pick his successor?
You saw that one. That came from Declan Noonan, who asked, do the panel think the board are going to let Wenger replace himself, and is that wise?
They definitely, because nobody on our board knows anything about football. You know, I mean, ask him, can you do this? I mean, what does Sir Chips Keswick know? He knows that Sir Peter, was a champion guy at school. That was it. Ivan Gazidis, a brilliant commercial director, but knows nothing about it.
How difficult is it to identify a quality manager who will accept a wage of £8.5 million a year?
Well, that's the thing. It's not rocket science with what's available. I mean, presuming that, you know, that there'll be, I don't know, four or five top candidates, won't there?
Frank de Boer, for example.
Well,
he'd probably bring Dennis Bergkamp and Mark Overmars with him.
Well, there would be options that would be, in a way, to me, it feels like Christmas, the concept of a new manager, just because we have been suffering a bit lately. Having said that, we've won two FA Cups in a row, and it seemed at the beginning of this season that we were building up and we were getting to that place. And, you know, if we'd have beaten bloody Swansea and a shit Man United club, we'd be top of the league now. It's ridiculous, you know. It should never have been allowed to get to where it is. And so, I mean, that's why, I mean, after the Swansea game, I really gave up hope on Wenger. And I would say, presuming Wenger does go, I would say it wouldn't be a good idea to have him hanging around, because he's better off at Grampus 8 or somewhere.
You mentioned Grampus 8. There was a rumour that when Pat Rice had to retire, God bless him, Wenger's first and only choice as assistant manager was the current, well, who was then the current manager of Nagoya Grampusay, Dragan Stojkovic. Oh. And the rumour was that he wanted to groom him to be his replacer, his replacement. But Gazidis, such is my understanding, said, no, we need someone Arsenal-like to be next to you. Steve Bold, my understanding from reading a good piece, had just admitted his daughter to the most expensive school in England and had to pay his salary. So he took up a yes sir, no sir, I'll put out the cones for you. Then we hired Shad Forsyth. He can't even put out the fucking cones now. But yeah, that's Bold's job.
Can I ask you a question? Who would you, of what's available? I mean, Pellegrini's going to be available. I don't know, who else is available? Who would you say could possibly fill Wenger's shoes?
I think it depends whether you are going to go for somebody in the long term or whether you're going to go for a short term fix, because Wenger's legacy is in a sense very similar to the legacy of Alex Ferguson in terms of his presence at the club, and whoever took the job after Alex Ferguson was going to have a nightmare.
Yeah,
and we know
well, Moyes looked like
it was, whether Moyes is the right person is another question. So would it be better to say we'll look for the long term successor over a period of time, but somebody like Hiddink or Pellegrini could do a very good job with any set of players, I would suggest to you, for a couple of years? And is that, do you need to think outside the box? I know that's an un-Arsenal thing, because Arsenal have had some of the most longest running managers, I think, in the history of football. You know, we just know how many Tottenham managers have been while Wenger's been in charge. Now, that's on one level, that's a very good thing. But because of the way in which Wenger has so dominated the club for so long, whether he moves upstairs or moves out, his presence is still going to be there. Mm. And a young late 30s, early 40s manager has got to be really a top person to be able to cope with that successor pressure.
Well, I remember when George Graham went, and he had a legacy, you know, and he's gone, and then
Bruce Rioch
comes in. Now, but you'd think, well, Bruce Rioch was, he served that sort of purpose. He was a guy in the middle. And yet, we got Bergkamp under Rioch. Okay.
It's David Dean,
but this is the thing. We don't have a David Dean now.
Exactly,
so the problem is, if Wenger goes, there's no one there to come out with some amazing, you know, Platy and Bergkamp signing.
Yeah, I'll tell you what though, Basti, money talks.
Why don't we just buy half of Leicester and the manager, right? And then just buy them out.
We could afford to.
The next manager is going to be the one whose agent is the best salesman. You know, because, I mean, that's how it works now, football. I mean, the game is run by certain agents, whereby there's a rumour that goes around, Arsenal tell one person that Arsenal need a goalkeeper. Now, do you think Cech was the only goalkeeper presented to Arsenal by an agent in the summer? Sure, he was the red-hot favourite, but I'm pretty certain that half of the 300 brilliant German goalkeepers, like Renny Adler and co, were, you know, taken to Arsenal. You can have them if you want to. This is the fee, these are the wages. Whoever the best agent representing, Diego Simeone, a Yogi Löw, a Didier Deschamps, whoever does the best salesman job to Kroenke's son, who sadly I think will be the person who chooses, then that's our next manager.
You seriously are not telling me Josh Kroenke will have the final word.
Him and Gazidis between the two of them.
Can you do your Josh Kroenke impersonation?
No, I'm not.
Kev, you're so good at this. He's so good at his dad.
I've got a cold. I'll work on it for you next time, all right? Anyway, while we're on the subject, a slight variation here, tweeted by Anthony Glenn, who said, is it possible that the beloved Arsenal brand is now being harmed by Wenger? Will the board refuse him a new deal because of this? Now, that sort of gets into the financial side of things in a way. There was a story in the Express which basically suggested the board had a conversation after the Swansea game where the idea that if Arsenal failed to win the league this season, the manager would be asked to step down took place. I'm not sure how much credence we can genuinely give that.
The Daily Express is not necessarily a paper you can trust with your...
But negative PR does have some power and some currency. Do you think the board would actually be swayed by the idea that Arsenal were being associated with a lot of bad things?
I think the board would be swayed by consistent sights of empty seats. I think the board would be swayed if Ozil and Sanchez came out and said, we want to leave. It needs big things to sway them. If Ramsey doesn't want to sign on, they wouldn't really worry. But you need some profoundly negative things to really make the board think. And I think it's probably negative PR, unfortunately, could play a major role there.
Do you think that, for example, let's say Arsenal managed to beat Hull in this FA Cup replay, season ticket holders, of which there are 45,000, have the opportunity to say to the club before the Watford quarter final, I don't want my ticket for this game, and save themselves on average 50 quid off the renewal price? Some people would just not even be organised enough to tell the club they don't want their ticket. They just won't show up.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think there'll be a lot of empty seats on Sunday if Arsenal did play Watford?
Well, I wouldn't be surprised, because within about 12 hours of the Tottenham game, certainly maybe 24 hours of the Tottenham game, I've had at least 6 or maybe 8 offers of tickets for that game. People think it's the West Brom game. They don't realise it might be a Hull FA Cup game. So people are really offering those tickets around now. They don't fancy whether it is West Brom is not a big.
They just don't want to go to see Arsenal.
No, they want,
well, if it's a cold, wet day, it's like the team doesn't fancy it. So I mean, that Swansea game, I just sat there and shivered with the team. What am I doing here?
A lot of the tickets I've been offered are either club level tickets or very good upper tier tickets. They're owned by corporates. And because the West Brom game has been shifted, if it is the league game, it's 5:30, that happens to clash with the England-Wales rugby match. And those same people will rather, if they're not going to be at Twickenham, which is where I'll be, they'll be watching it on television. They'd rather watch that. And that, so...
Well, I think that's a minority of Arsenal, most Arsenal fans. You know, I think you're rare
areas,
that you're that keen on rugby. I mean, I don't think most Arsenal fans give a hoot what goes on at Twickenham.
But a significant number of people in club level and who have corporate seats in the good areas, the upper tier, they share them around within their companies and so forth.
Yeah.
And a lot of those tickets are given out to people that, you know, to use.
Yeah.
And they can't get rid of them.
I think a bigger factor is that Arsenal, for some reason, have made a home... OK, it's an FA Cup quarter-final, but it is Watford at home. The game has already been announced as televised and moved accordingly. And they've made it a Grade B game. No chance. Mm. Got to make it a Grade C game and pray that... well, for a start, they've got to pray that Watford won 25% of the allocation rather than 5%, which is what they normally get for away teams normally get for league games. And but for us to sell all of our 48,000 tickets... Grade B prices, it's not going to happen. I mean,
plus,
I'm giving mine up.
Plus, Watford are quite good, and you could go there, and we know what that could end up like. I mean, just assuming we do manage to beat Hull, and I don't know what he's taking up there, because there was this weird thing in the Standard tonight about that they're flying up tomorrow because it's a 7 o'clock kickoff, when they were going to fly out tonight and have a night in a hotel, and they're not doing that now. I don't know why 45 minutes difference in flight would stop them leaving the day before and make them fly there and back in one day. And, you know, from my experience, when Arsenal fly somewhere like Norwich there and back, they never have a very good time of it. I question sometimes some of the arrangements that are made, travel arrangements and things, that just don't seem to make any sense. They don't seem to use common sense and get the players into the right frame of mind to go and play an away fixture. You know, from my point of view, I would always say it would be better to get there earlier, be relaxed, do a bit of training, whatever, locally, whatever it is that it takes, rather than just sort of turn up off the airport into the ground and you know, not to beat Norwich, which has been our experience of that sort of travel arrangement.
Okay. Well, let's look at the financial side of things with another question, actually, from Anthony Glenn, who tweeted, is the European Super League the final piece in the jigsaw for Kroenke and company with a stream of unthreatened income forever? Now, this obviously refers to the so-called secret meeting of the so-called Big Five clubs in London last week to discuss the idea that instead of the Champions League, there should be something where... by guaranteed entry occurs for the clubs with the greatest resources and the supposedly greatest reputation. Does that sit comfortably with you if Arsenal are in that elite?
If Arsenal are in that elite, well, that's most in the elite, yeah, we're one of the five biggest football clubs in this country, so that makes sense. We are the biggest club in London. the capital city and the second most popular city in the whole of the world. I get that. But if ultimately it's going to be a European Super League, and it looks like it's going to be, this suggestion from one of the CEOs was that it was a meeting about a pre-season tournament. That's balderdash, absolute balderdash, because some people are bigger in Australia, some people are bigger in India, some are bigger in mainland Europe, some people are bigger in the States. So it's nothing to do with that. It's to do with the proper European Super League, at which point football has been stolen from us, and I have to turn to Orient or Barnet or something like that.
Because that's how it's going to work. Are they actually going to take these clubs out of the Premiership? Or yes. And that's it. They're not going to play in the Premiership. There's no more Premiership. That's it.
As I understand it, it's the big clubs in Germany and Italy who don't get the same income from their domestic leagues.
Yeah.
And what they're thinking is, we need something which is a bit like the Premier League in terms of interest to the world.
Is this to replace the European
exactly
Champions
right.
League?
So it's a midweek thing, I think.
Right.
So they would devise between them a competition similar in a
so if
league.
So Leicester win the league, they can't get into it.
That's my let's put it this way.
Absolute nonsense.
I think
I would give up on football if that happened.
Yeah, just be ridiculous. It'd be like RoboCup football. It'd be just.
I'm not sure how well thought out it has been, but it's coming from the German and Italian clubs.
I don't think it'll get past.
There is this organisation called the European Clubs Association, which used to be the G14, which has basically, I think, probably about 30, 40 actual clubs as members. And some of them are panicking because they can see all the best players leaving them and coming to England. Because the Premier League now, I mean, in the top 30 clubs in terms of income, it's pretty soon 20 of those places will be filled by Premier League clubs.
Yeah.
Simply because of the TV income. But anyway,
no, I would not like Arsenal to be a part of any such rubbish whatsoever, or any English team for that matter.
I mean, let's face it. I mean, I think the meeting was called, and this ESL was to be funded by the guy who's the owner of the Chicago Bears American football team, and he owns an American football team, and he's seeing how every year six games being played in London, England. That are actual proper NFL games. He's thinking, well, fuck it. This is essentially a global NFL. Let's have a global football league. Soccer league, excuse me.
Well, it sounds like something, no disrespect to our friends across, our cousins across the pond, but it sounds like some stupid American idea to me.
The point being, a lot more Premier League clubs are being bought by Americans.
Well, Trump could buy them all soon, couldn't he? And then where will we
be? Ultimately, it's not our decision because we don't matter. The whole thing over the Barcelona ticket, that's going to be charged extra for that. I mean, the club ultimately decided to withdraw that, and they gave us a proper telling off. You know, you read your T's and C's, we should have done this, we're doing you a favour.
Yeah.
After corporation tax, they would have made a profit of £400,000 on those tickets, which paid the wages of three players for 1 week. That's therefore £400,000 is absolutely nothing. My £1,500 a year for my less than brilliant season ticket. I mean I don't think that pays one of our youth team players' wages for one week.
The question is if they develop a different competition that I don't think the fans will take to.
Even though we're playing top glamour opposition every midweek,
that's not a question for the fans. In fairness, it's a question about the customers.
All right,
yeah. We're not fans, we're customers.
The thing is, it ceases to be competition. We're playing the same people the whole time, and say, lo and behold, Leicester win the league, or West Brom, or something, like the unthinkable happens. Surely they should be rewarded with a European competition than the UEFA Cup.
So would we play the great and the good home and away twice a season like you would in the Premier League? Is that what it's supposed to be?
I would guess that would probably be the case. Yeah, either that or they'd have two leagues, and then the winner of each league meets in the final.
Reminds me of the scene in Doctor Strangelove. If anyone's old enough to remember Doctor Strangelove, and they're sitting in the bunker, and there's the scenario where They're in the bunker, but there would have to be a lot of very attractive women there. And the guy suddenly goes, that sounds like quite a good idea, actually. Because you've got to procreate. And I was suddenly thinking, well, yeah, you know what? We'd end up only playing Bayern and Barca all the time. Maybe we'd get better. So I'm starting to like the idea now, just because, yeah, as long as we were in the club forever.
Okay. All right. Well, let's just look ahead to the last game of the season. We're playing Aston Villa.
Manager, well, they're coming down here.
They're coming down here. The manager is one Remy Gard. And I was thinking earlier, there's not too many players that have played under Arsene Wenger that have actually become managers.
You're not suggesting he's going to be the next Arsenal manager?
Well, all I'm asking at the moment...
Kev, look where he is!
I'm asking for you to, first of all, recall...
God.
Other players played under Wenger who have gone into management.
Oh, yeah, Tony sort of. Adams.
Yeah, Vieira at New York City.
Tony Adams.
Tony Adams.
Paul Watford. Merson.
Paul Merson.
Player manager at Walsall.
Good shout.
Oh, yes. Good shout.
Any others we can think of?
Well, maybe they'll pop up during the evening.
Yeah, I mean, did Oleg Luzhny manage?
Yes, he did.
Whether or not you can really count him as being heavily influenced by Wenger... now, Dob, what does that say to you about... normally you would have thought with the number of... It's been there 20 years. Okay, the last 6 or 7 years, all right. The 13 years before, a lot of players.
We've got some great pundits out of him.
Yeah. Great pundits.
Old Dicko. Let's be honest, the only good pundits on TV are Arsenal players. All the rest are absolute rubbish, apart from maybe, I don't know... Well, you can name... I mean, let's be... Keown's great. Dicko's great.
I'll be unpopular. I think Jermaine Genus does a very
he's
good job.
He's all right. Yeah, he's okay. That's not unpopular. He's okay.
No, thank you, Pastor.
He was even on Question Time recently, wasn't he? He was so good they got him on Question Time.
He was very good.
By the way, can I just say, I did just a little bit of the old bumping into footballers of the past. I had a half a Guinness with Remy Gard at the Wells Tavern once when it was still a real pub.
How long ago was that?
That was when the week he joined Arsenal.
Good
and
God.
I walked into the pub.
It's now a gastro pub, isn't it?
It's now a gastro pub, but it was a proper old booze event. Yeah. And I walked in, and there was Remy Gard with half a Guinness. I said, aren't you Remy Gard? And he said, yeah. And I said, I'm going to have a half a Guinness as well. That was it. We had a half a Guinness. He was very friendly, very pleasant guy. Very
nice.
You
were going to ask us, Kev, whether he'd set Villa up to concede enough goals that we could actually win the title on goal difference on the last day of the season.
I am intrigued. I mean, Tom Fox, the former... commercial director.
Who is about to be sacked, I believe.
Is that right?
Well, that came out in the Daily Express next to a story.
I read it elsewhere, not the Daily Express.
Well,
anyway.
I mean, do you think there was any element of Tom Fox ringing Arsene Wenger and saying, Arsene, have you got a suggestion of who I could get as manager? Do you think there might have been an element of that?
Maybe.
I wouldn't doubt it.
My God, he wishes he hadn't.
He probably only went for Remy Gard because Gilles Grimaldi turned it down.
Yeah, maybe he thought it would be a good grounding for Remy, then he could come and take over from him.
Could well.
Yes, and I don't think that's going to happen.
But
interestingly, Tottenham have got Newcastle last game of the season, and we've got Aston Villa last game of the season. So it could run down to the wire between us and them. I'm just thinking...
Well, for second.
For fourth, even, possibly, depending on how we go over the next...
I mean, look, let's just completely remove ourselves from emotion here. Now,
is this football we're talking about?
No, it isn't. Knowing that basically what has gone on in previous seasons, there is an 8-point gap between the third place and first place. There are 9 fixtures, 27 points left to play for. Is it impossible for Arsenal to win the league now?
No. In answer to your question, is it impossible? No, it is still mathematically possible.
Right. Is it probable?
No.
Is there any chance, though, realistically? Do you think that gap is achievable?
I think Leicester may well be champions by the time they play Swansea in about 5 fixtures' time.
Really?
I think Leicester have got everything we haven't got. And do you know what? Fair play to them. You know, Man City, Arsenal, Man United, Chelsea, bunch of overpaid fucking real estate agents poncing about in jacuzzis and Hampstead, Come on, Leicester. I'm sick of it. I'm sorry. I'd love a little team without any money, with a bit of chutzpah, with a player like Vardy, who'll just run like a fucking nutter to get the ball in, you know, at the touchline, and have a go and play a bit of football. I would love it. I'd love it.
Do you think...
Would you like Riyad Mahrez to be signed for us for next season?
Yeah, why not? Mm-hmm. Go for it. I'll take Vardy as well.
Spurs are 5 points behind.
Spurs actually have got a slightly more difficult run in than we have.
Yeah, right.
So I think they've got Chelsea, Liverpool,
Man United, Man. Stoke.
Stoke, yeah, always a bit tricky.
Ultimately, it's Leicester to lose. What was that racehorse on them?
Devon Lock.
Yeah, Devon Lock. Unless Leicester do a Devon Lock, it's theirs. I mean, they're playing, sperm between now and the end of the season.
I don't think Leicester have a difficult... I think their last three games...
Yeah, but they struggled to beat Norwich.
But they did beat them. You know, we struggled to beat Swansea and we managed to lose.
This is not purposeful, by the way. This is not personal. This is a bit of a David Blaine moment. I just happen to have this that I've been twiddling in my thumbs. You can tell
this is great. As they say, this is great radio, but I will describe Basti in his hand. He's holding the wrapper of a Fox's Glacier Mint.
And that is purely accidental. That I happened to pick up earlier and eat a Fox's Glacier Mint, and it happens to be in my hand now. I don't think that's a good omen for Arsenal winning the league.
Do you believe Arsenal deserve any credit for being above Manchester United, Manchester City, Chelsea, clubs with bigger resources? Are we being too hard on them?
No, I think those clubs deserve the opposite of credit for being where they are. I mean, we've generally been in this position over the last two or three years, and we've got slightly better and better.
Well, we've been in second, third or fourth ever since we last won the league.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, we've been remarkably consistent, and you know, but we haven't really shown sustained signs of progress. We've stayed roughly where we are, whereas other people have leapt around us. Now that, of course, we know suits what Kroenke wants.
Yeah.
Stability, and he can take his $3 million a year dividend, or sorry, consulting fees out. Yeah. And I bet you any money you like it'll rise in the next year or so because he'll have done something else wonderful for us. But we've stayed more or less where we are and we have not progressed. And that is where I think my frustration, disappointment comes, and I suspect that's where a lot of the frustration, disappointment of others come from. But at the moment, there are too many people who are quite happy with, well, the club being where they are.
Well, not the fans, though. I mean, we would really, the fans. What's frustrating is we are that close, and we are one or two big buys away from getting some, you know, the right players.
I wonder is how many of the fans or customers are that passionate. I mean, I don't, you know, I can remember going to watch Arsenal at Highbury on a snowy Friday night just before Christmas, and there was 19,000 in there. And we were playing Norwich, I think, just before Christmas, something like that. You know, the hardcore fans are not 60,000. No. They're not 50,000. They're not 40,000. They're not even 30,000. And the price of the season ticket means we have a rather very radically different demographic going to the ground than we had at Highbury.
Is that true of all clubs?
I think it's particularly true of London clubs,
yeah.
And particularly, I suspect, Arsenal and Chelsea.
It is interesting that in terms of the average price, I believe the club that charges least in the Premier League is Leicester. And then therein lies perhaps a moral.
And you look at the excitement and the dynamism of their ground. And that's obviously partly to do with the fact they're up at the top.
Yeah.
Well, but to think that they were nearly relegated last season. Mm. I mean, it's Hollywood couldn't make it up, could they? Mm. I mean, it's...
Well, you know, they appointed the Tinker Man as their manager.
He hasn't tinkered very much.
Well, absolutely. Yeah, he wasn't broke. He didn't fix it at all. And he turned Nigel Pearson's bunch of oafs into, you know, really good football.
He reminds me of my Auntie Doris, actually. Yeah. He really
Claudio
does.
Nero,
yeah, it's quite similar to my Auntie Doris.
Did they have Mahrez last season? Was he
right? Yeah, they had him.
They had him last season. Okay. Did they have Kante last season?
No, Kante. Right. Yeah.
Okay, I mean, we were top of the league around Christmas time, just after, I believe. Can anyone actually pinpoint a reason for the collapse? We've won two games out of nine in the Premier League. Is there anything we can identify as something tangible that's gone wrong? Why did it just change?
We did seem to play pretty much the same 12 or 13 players every single week for 2.5 months, with Sanchez injured, with Wilshere injured, Walcott was injured at one point, there was no Welbeck. We had to play the same 11 or 12 every single week, and they just got knackered.
I think Coquelin going out for, how long was Coquelin out for? A little while.
But we actually didn't begin the decline until quite a few games after Coquelin got injured.
Because Cazorla got injured, actually.
No, it didn't, the decline didn't really start till Man City.
Yeah.
We haven't actually, since the Man City game, we haven't had any, I don't think we've had any serious injuries.
Well, losing to Southampton 4-0 was just immediately after beating Man City, and we just collapsed spectacularly in that game. What went wrong at Southampton?
Well, what went wrong at Southampton was the same thing that I think went wrong last season. We went there with completely the wrong attitude.
Yeah, high heels on again.
Yeah, and it's interesting. We do make the same mistakes, or we lose in the same way at the same grounds against the same teams. We lost at Southampton very badly at roughly the same time last season. What do we do this season? In the return fixture, we struggled and struggled and struggled. We just got the winning goal last season, about the 89th minute. This season it was very similar, but we couldn't score. Again, Fraser Foster had a blinder. Again, away at Liverpool, second season on the trot, we concede an injury time equaliser when we've managed to get very close to winning, having been in a losing position. We go to Manchester United when we're actually playing quite well, and we collapse again. We've lost at home to Swansea three seasons out of four. So there's something that's wrong, I think, in the psyche of the club, and whether that's all down to the manager or it's the players, there's something not quite right that enables the same things to be happening time and time again.
I think that this walking out against Southampton with the high heels and not giving respect to certain teams, I think if you've got players like Wilshere or Sanchez, who are those players that surge forward, we don't seem to have enough surging forward for my liking. There seems to be a lot of... It happened against Tottenham. We surged forward, guess what, we scored. But there's a lot of timid passing sideways, left and right, that whole round the area thing, and even going back to Mertesacker, and then Mertesacker sort of like some sort of baby donkey wandering around what to do. Giraffe, yes, with his, where do I go? Oh, all right, I'll go over there. It seems so, it's slow motion. It's not decisive, quick, come on, let's have it. There's none of that, you know, rightiness.
Well, but the Invincibles moved the ball a lot faster than this. And in fact, the team that probably should have won the league in 2008 with Fabregas at the centre of it, they moved the ball a hell of a lot.
Yeah, we were against Tottenham. We looked so slow at the beginning.
But since that 2008 collapse, I think the team has slowed down so much. It's incredible.
Mm.
So basically, it's Gail Clichy's fault when he sits over against Birmingham and gave away that penalty. If you see what I mean. No, the Eduardo game, where Martin Taylor went through his leg. We were there, it was 2-1, wasn't it? In injury time. And the ball comes over to Clichy. He's on the inside edge of the box. And for some reason, plays the ball 5 yards in front of him rather than oofing it. Player comes in from the right wing, takes it off, and Clichy takes him out. That was when Gallas, our captain, remember that, wouldn't go off the pitch.
Well, I turned around to Kev, was it the Leicester game? And when it was 1-1, well, we were losing. And we agreed there were too many boys in this team and not enough men.
I think we said they were nice. I think
they were too nice, that's right. They were much too nice. Everyone, look at every player there, they're all nice. You know, Walcott and Ramsey, they were really nice guys. And having bumped into Giroud, I've got to say, he was a really nice guy. But I don't want nice. You don't want nice. I want nasty. I want Arsenal.
You want Diego Costa?
Yeah, well, Martin Keown. Mm. You know, there's someone with a bit of golf. You can still be decent and an Arsenal man. You don't have to be I'm going to use the C word about... I'm not going to use it, but you've already got what I'm saying about Costa. The Costa is the C word. But players, you don't want people cheating dirty bastards, but you want people with a bit of Martin Keown, a bit of Tony Adams.
It's something like Yaya Toure, isn't it? You want a man.
Yeah, you want a man.
You want a man.
Well, you don't want Yaya Toure now, because I think he's...
I think Koscielny's a good defender. Mertesacker's all right, but they're not... They don't really give you that feeling of like, right, this is like your dad, you can trust him. You know what I mean?
That's because Wenger has bought a certain kind of player for the last 10 years.
Hmm.
You know, the Invincibles evolved out the team that he largely, or the defence he largely inherited out of from George, or the George Graham era, effectively. And even with the Invincibles' defence, we know, you know, whether he wanted or didn't want Campbell, but he also, you know, his centre-back pioneering partner there was Kolo Touré.
Mm.
And there was this story that he got Kolo Touré in because he thought he was a good footballer, but he didn't know where to play him.
Mm-hmm.
And he asked the opposition manager in a pre-season game to have a look at him and say, where does he think his position should be? Should it be at fullback? Should it be at centre-back? Should it be centre-midfield?
Mm.
And he Touré had never played centre-back.
He really until wanted that to, but he was 5'9". Well, he still is 5'9", and well, he only plays centre-back because of injuries.
Yeah. I mean, back to the current team, I think Coquelin's probably the only player. I mean, he got sent, you know, wow, we're getting sent off at White Hart Lane for sliding in.
Stupidity.
Well, stupidity, but you know what? I mean, in about 1,000 derbies out, with like 10 years ago, that would have just been, that wouldn't have even been a yellow card in a derby. That would have been, get up, Kane, you just left your foot dragging a bit. Kane could have run on there if he wanted to. He didn't have to go down. You watch that, his legs just, oh, great. You know, he's like,
yeah, I think you're scraping the barrel for an excuse.
Maybe I'm scraping the barrel for an excuse, but at least Coquelin is someone who gets stuck in, right, for all his sins. He's the only player who gets stuck in. I mean, Ozil, have you seen him try to head a ball lately?
But the thing is, I mean, there's a difference between people who want to give it and people like Ozil. I mean, he does as much as he's willing to do and fulfil the terms of his contract to get his £160,000.
Yeah, he's not that sort of
player. You put the three of us in Arsenal shirts, we will run harder, we'll put in more tackles than anyone else can.
Speak for yourself,
but
then.
We will be fucking useless.
Yeah, of course we will.
He's great for yourself.
Look, he's great at what he is. But he's not been called up to the French national team squad because there are five or six players ahead of them, including Morgan Schneider.
Who we could have had.
Indeed. But he's a great squad player. But when he came back from injury to make everyone roll their sleeves up and lean forward and go, great, we've got business, because Francis Coquelin, who couldn't get into the Charlton team, he was on loan that last year, you know, couldn't get in their team. And, you know, let's face it, we got fucking lucky with him in the sense that he fit in when nobody else did.
Well, you know that Yaya Sanogo is scoring a lot of goals at Charlton. He could be our centre forward next season.
Be careful what you wish for.
That's quite apt, Ian, because I forgot one question sent in. I like to mention everybody. So a very brief one to finish from Joe Gagliardi. Assuming both fit, has Welbeck passed Giroud as our number one striker? Any opinions?
I think they're two different kinds of players. You'd use them for different. If you were a tactically astute manager, you would set your team up to play in a slightly different way depending on who your lead striker was going to be. I don't think they're alternatives to each other because Welbeck is manifestly quicker than Olivier Giroud and probably plays a completely different kind of game. I'd prefer always have a player like Welbeck myself rather than Giroud in the team, but I think at times you need a player like Giroud. So no, I don't see them as alternatives really to each other because they're not the same sort of player.
Well, I see Giroud a bit like Alan Smith. He holds the ball up well, he's a good footballer and he plays for the team. And he will score goals, although he's going through a lean spell. But he can seem a bit slow and cumbersome. But, I mean, Alan Smith always had Ian Wright playing off him.
Mm.
Or Will Todd. Or, you know, or someone... Or actually
not
did,
Will
no, not
Campbell,
Will
Todd. Kevin Campbell.
Kevin Campbell, that's right. So he'd always have someone... But then you had... If you've got a player like Giroud, you've got to have someone who's playing off him. Who he'll hold the ball up and he'll pass it. And then maybe he'll do that that lovely goal where he dinked it over. And was it Ramsey who put it in? Or Ozil? I can't remember. It was Ozil, I think. And Giroud did that... You know, amazing little flick. He's a bit too flicky, but he does when he came on. We did suddenly look a little stronger. You know, I felt that Ramsey suddenly running through there. You know, Giroud sort of went, "Oh, here you go," and it brought something different.
Could they play
them both together?
You play them together. That'll be like 1989-90 when Alan Smith was out injured and Noel Quinn came in and did well and Graham tried to play Quinn and Smith up front together for three games. You know, identical twins.
Quinn and
the way
Smith?
They play football.
I remember that.
1989-90.
Noel Quinn.
Look, if it was 89-90, we're playing 4-4-2 and you had a big Giroud or Bentner, people like that, flicking balls on for a little Walcott to run onto, we'd win everything. But Walcott, Michael Owen, players of that, Jermaine Defoe, players of that ilk, they're redundant now. There's no place for players like that. Players like that get turned into right backs and called Hector.
Well, I think if Walcott did run, but he's been standing around and he's not been making the runs.
Great article by David Udo in the current issue.
Let's not revisit the Theo theme. I think on that note, we will just plug the current issue of the Gooner, which went to press after the dramatic late win against Leicester and features Danny Welbeck on the front cover. Inside, there are features on treasured Arsenal items owned by our contributors, the left field idea of Mario Pochettino as the next Arsenal manager, who the captain for 2016-17 should be, memories of watching football on the terraces, reflections on a decade of Theo, and much, much more. It will be on sale outside the stadium at the home match next weekend, whether it be West Brom or Watford. It costs £2.50 and is also available from the Gooner website. I'm getting away from Basti.
Yes, just briefly, any Gooners in the Hampstead or Belsize Park area can also get the Hampstonian for £2, which features a picture of Monreal at the greengrocer's and Robert Pires with the fishmonger. So that's worth it just
what
for that.
More?
It's an Arsenal pro-Arsenal publication, worth a
collectible, if you
will. Exactly, there you go.
With that plug over, a reminder that you can contact us via Twitter at GoonerPodcast and email at GoonerPodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for all the questions and topics submitted for today. With that, it is goodbye from David.
Good night.
Mustafa.
Good night.
And Ian.
Good night.
We will be back with another edition in April, with hopefully a title challenge still very much alive and an FA Cup semi-final to look forward to.
Oh, God.
Got to go
what about the Champions League final?
Well, I mean, let's try.
There's always next season.
This is your host, Kevin Witcher, saying goodbye and thanks for listening. La-di-da-di-da, la-di-da-di-dee, all good friends and jolly good company. Wahey!